Welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am your host, Pat Johnston, sitting here in the attic of the LOL headquarters in Gratiot County. And yes, it is the 4th of July weekend, the 250th birthday of the country. And yeah, it doesn't feel all that great now, does it? But try to make it your own. Try to make it as enjoyable as you can. For me, I always like watching the HBO miniseries called John Adams with Paul Giamatti playing John Adams. Can't believe that one's almost 20 years old now, but it is still a remarkable, remarkable piece of art and history. And then I also like watching the musical from 1972 called 1776. And there, John Adams has a great voice. I always like to think that's how they debated the Declaration of Independence. Would have been more interesting. But try to make it your own if you don't really feel all that great about your country right now. But guess what? You are not alone. A PBS Marist poll this week shows that 83% of Americans believe America has strayed from the ideals the country was founded on 2.5 centuries ago. And well, I'd agree with that sentiment, considering how the MAGA majority on the Supreme Court ruled this week that political parties can spend unlimited amounts of cash on campaigns. Oh yeah, see, the MAGA Supreme Court said it's a violation of free speech to block billionaires and millionaires from spending whatever amounts of cash they want on our campaigns and our candidates. And I'm sure there's no expectation that these candidates will have to serve these corporate and billionaire masters. No, not at all. So much for all men being created equal. Of course, the MAGA Supreme Court has already gutted campaign laws throughout the last decade or so by allowing corporations to spend whatever to influence elections, and however much cash billionaires like Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer's new data center pal, billionaire tech bro Sam Altman, or Michigan's Betsy DeVos and her family can spend on campaigns. Now, I'm not sure that's exactly why 83% of the country believes America has strayed from the ideals that were set here for this country. But for me, I think that's one major reason. The working class feels like it doesn't have a voice. And how 9 people can legislate American law that's meant to hurt the working class in this country is beyond amazing when you really think about it, isn't it? And it's really amazing that the corporate Democratic Party elites aren't making Supreme Court reform an issue ever. They should have done it in 2020. They didn't. They should have done it in 2022. They didn't. They should have done it in 2024. They didn't. Or it's amazing that you're not hearing corporate Democratic Party elites call for an expansion of the Supreme Court, or at least term limiting the court. It's almost like the corporate Democratic Party establishment likes the way things are running right now, don't you think? But while the corporate Democratic establishment keeps fighting for the status quo, which is allowing the Trump regime corruption, allowing the corporate government revolving door of corruption, allowing the corruption of backing a genocidal Israeli government, while protecting their cushy little seats in Washington and elsewhere, the working class continues to fight back. You remember last week when 3 Democratic Socialists won their primary races in 3 New York City congressional districts? And you recall hearing all those so-called centrist voices, you know, the sages, the very serious people, otherwise known as the corporate class, aka the Epstein class. You remember all of them sounding all verklempt because working class New Yorkers decided to vote for people who would, you know, support the working class. And do you recall hearing all those same voices declare that we must ignore these Democratic Socialists of America victories because they only happened in liberal New York City? Well, 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 this week, another Democratic Socialist upended a 15-term Democratic congressman in New York. Oh, wait, no, not in New York. Oh, where? Oh, in Colorado. 29-year-old Malak Quiros trounced longtime Democratic member of Congress Diane DeGette. Kyros was born in Ethiopia in 1997, the same year Diane DeGette won her first election. Now, DeGette, let's be honest, was not some so-called centrist like Michigan Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin declares herself to be. DeGette believed in Medicare for All and for abolishing ICE. However, she voted to give more money to war criminal Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli government. And, you know, I'm still amazed at how not only are political elite pundits still not getting how Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people and also how Israel's and dear leaders Trump war on Iran are really the underlying issue for many working class voters. Sure, you'll see poll after poll it says that Israel and Gaza is far down the list of issues that voters are really concerned about. But it's not that black and white. Now, while the Trump regime and MAGA Republicans in D.C., like Michigan's Lisa McClain from the Thumb region, or Bill Huizenga on the west side of the state, or Jack Bergman in the UP, or Macomb County's John James, who just received a hearty endorsement of dear leaders to become Michigan's next governor, while they all voted to slash and dash working class programs like food assistance and Medicaid, they love giving billions and billions of dollars in aid to Israel's genocidal government and also spend over $100 billion of our money so far on this stupid war on Iran. The working class is fed up. Just fed up being told that we can't strengthen our own people here. We can't strengthen our own infrastructure here while we have money for Israel and idiotic as well as illegal Middle Eastern wars fought on Israel's behalf. But when Democrats join in the MAGA Republican effort to send our taxpayer money to Israel to fund Israel's genocide and to fund Israel's wars, and then to accept loads of cash from the American-Israeli Political Action Committee called AIPAC to fund their campaign coffers in exchange for votes giving Israel more of my money, more of your money, and more of our money, it proves the corporate Democratic Party establishment elites can work together just fine with the Trump regime when they really need to. Oh, no, not on behalf of the working class, but on behalf of defense contractors and on behalf of Israel. The working class is seeing this game play out, and it's seeing how the corporate media plays along by parroting Israeli talking points. The working class isn't going to cower into a corner because they're accused of being anti-Semites just because they don't want to fund a corrupt and war criminal Israeli government. The working class has been told, we just don't have enough money to spend here. But we've got all this money and all of these resources in the world to pay for Israel's right-wing genocidal government. That is what the working class has been told for decades. And let me let you in just in a little secret, okay? Because my taxpayer dollars and your taxpayer dollars are paying for Israel's bombs and weapons to wipe out Palestinians and the Lebanese, Israel then doesn't have to spend any money really on defense. No, that gives Israel, you see, a little breathing room. So that way they can pay for their own programs, such as Medicare for All. See, we can't get that here, of course, but in Israel, yeah, that's right, Israel can do it. Thanks again to your taxpayer dollars, to my taxpayer dollars, to our taxpayer dollars covering their defense costs. How's that America first? You want to know why Democratic Socialists are winning Democratic primary races? That is why. And it's just not Israel. It's a corporate Democratic Party establishment that has for years told us that we just can't do big things like Medicare for All, holding the Trump regime accountable for January 6th, or holding the George W. Bush administration accountable for war crimes. We're always told that we've got to do things incrementally. More than 4 million Americans so far have lost food assistance over the past year, and that number will soon rise when the Trump regime's and MAGA Republicans' Big Beautiful Bill, or the MAGA murder budget, begins requiring states to impose draconian and wasted work requirements on those needing food assistance. You see, it's always funny to me. It's always funny to me when MAGA Republicans pass that MAGA murder budget because, you see, it was only 6 months after dear leader Trump got back into the White House. I mean, they claimed that the Biden economy wiped out the working class, meaning that many in the same working class that had been wiped out needed help, all right? They needed help. I mean, that's what it seemed to me, right? Yet, despite a supposedly awful Biden economy that had decimated the working class so much that it was going to take dear leader Trump years to fix, MAGA Republicans, and, Dear Leader Trump said, working class Americans had to go through a process proving they were working in order to receive food assistance. Now, if the Biden economy was just so awful for the working class, which needed assistance, why then did MAGA Republicans in Congress further punish the struggling working class with these draconian work requirements? Hey, Lisa McClain, John James, Jack Bergman, or Bill Huizenga, where are you? Anyone want to, you know, square that circle for me or bottle that edge for me? The working class in this country has been given a raw deal, and the American dream is bye-bye. As one 24-year-old from that NPR mayor survey showing, you know, that 83% of this country believes that we've lost our way. This is a quote from this 24-year-old from Texas, and it's right on here. They said, "It's embarrassing that the U.S. has poor infrastructure and, unlike many other developed nations, does not offer universal health care. We are currently sending," she says, "more money to different countries such as Israel rather than investing in our own citizens. We all struggle with bills, but being worried about where your next meal is coming from is just ridiculous." You want to know why Democratic socialists are winning across the country and why Democratic socialism is becoming more and more popular with the working class? Well, there's your answer right there. From a 24-year-old who's already understanding who government represents and who government does not represent. Leftoflansing@gmail.com. Visit the show on Patreon, where you can get all of the episodes plus some bonus materials all for free. And you can also donate to the show if you wish from there. Follow Left of Lansing on YouTube. And I have to tell you, I have not decided yet, but I'm really thinking I might do a little Left of Lansing live on YouTube on the night of the Michigan primary, which is, believe it or not, just about a month away. So I'll come down with that decision probably here in a few weeks. It's something I'm thinking about, and I would, you know, like to do it for you. So stay tuned for that. Polls continue to show progressive Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed and his insurgent campaign continues to lead in the polls over the corporate establishment pick and Miss AIPAC Congresswoman Haley Stevens and also Democratic State Senator Mallory McMorrow in the Michigan Democratic Senate primary race. And he just keeps raking in all kinds of endorsements, including from the UAW, for instance. Still waiting, though, to see some other polls, maybe from Epic MRA and some other highly reputable polls here in Michigan. We haven't really gotten many, I'd say, in the last, I don't know, month or so. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, Michigan-based writer Tom Perkins, he had an awesome story that he wrote for Mondo Weiss this week on how Abdul Al-Sayed was able to make a lot of noise for himself and for his campaign when he announced that he'd be making some campaign stops in Lansing and also in Ann Arbor with the popular progressive podcaster Hassan Piker back in March. It seemed like everything was kind of sitting at a standstill for all three candidates in that race at that time, and Haley Stevens was still benefiting from her name recognition. Now, if you remember, the joint campaign with Abdul and Hassan Piker, along with rising progressive star in Congress, Pittsburgh's Summer Lee, it drew criticism from MAGA Republicans, of course, MAGA Michigan Republicans, of course. But what was so disappointing was that it received loads of criticism from Abdul's fellow Democratic Senate primary opponents, Haley Stevens and Mallory McMorrow. As Tom Perkins writes in that story, the March controversy in part boosted Al-Sayed by drawing the spotlight to his campaign at a time when he had relatively weak name recognition. Michigan's media had not yet paid especially close attention to the race, making it more difficult for Al-Sayed to reach undecided voters. And a late January poll showed that 55% of Michiganders didn't even know who he was. The attacks drew heavy local and national media coverage, if you recall. And a post-controversy poll showed a 13% jump in Abdul Al-Sayed's name recognition. Simultaneously, he surged ahead of McMorrow and Stevens to become the frontrunner. The data suggests that many of those who were undecided moved to Al-Sayed after learning more about him during the controversy. And Mr. Perkins reminds us, importantly, the controversy also cemented Al-Sayed's position as the race's anti-establishment candidate. Through March, Mallory McMorrow attempted to position herself as the race's changed candidate. Okay, so recall that both Haley Stevens and Mallory McMorrow attacked Dr. Abdul for appearing with Hassan Piker, who not only stands for democratic socialist principles such as Medicare for all and ending our ties with Israel's genocidal government, but who also pulls in 3 million viewers per day to his podcast. A huge chunk of those viewers are younger people, especially younger men. groups that Democrats kind of lost during the 2024 campaign. So someone had their pulse on the vibe of the working class, the Democratic base here in Michigan, and it wasn't McMorrow and it wasn't Haley Stevens. Since then, Abdul has been leading in the polls and he gained the endorsement of the UAW, like I said, which Haley Stevens was really counting on. He gained the endorsement of the Wayne County Black Caucus, which is big if Abdul is going to cut into some of Stevens' support in Wayne County. And then there's this. Dr. Abdul just got the backing of the National Indivisible Grassroots Political Action Committee. You know, a lot of those No Kings rallies that you're seeing pop up on the news and on your social media feeds? Yeah, many of those rallies were all conducted and organized by Indivisible groups throughout the country. That's big. Now, Ezra Levin, a co-executive director of Indivisible, said that El-Sayed understands that the government should work for ordinary people, not corporations, billionaires, or well-connected political insiders. And that's where, you know, the working class electorate is. I think that's where they are here in Michigan and elsewhere. No guardrails whatsoever. They see how their voices don't match the power of those crypto bros or those tech bros, you know, as like they've gotten. I mean, they see how their voices don't match the power that crypto bros or tech bros have within both the Republican and Democratic Party circles. That's why progressives and Democratic socialists are winning elections right now, and that's why it is building momentum across the country. A few years ago in 2022, a progressive Democrat named Betsy Kafia ran for a state House seat in Northwest Michigan around Traverse City. And thanks to the citizen-driven anti-gerrymandering push, last decade in Michigan, Kafia's district turned just a slight purple, but MAGA Republicans were expected to win that seat still, especially in an off-year election where Joe Biden was in the White House. Yet Betsy Kafia took her strong working class, her strong progressive voice to the people of that district, a district that she's been a part of for years. And guess what? She won, pulling off a close upset victory. Why? Because she promised she'd be a fighter for them. The Michigan Republican Party then made it their mission to defeat Representative Kafia in 24. But not only did she win re-election, she won by a bigger margin this time around. And that was in an election year that Dear Leader Trump won the state of Michigan. Betsy Kafia is a fighter for public schools, for teachers, for unions, for government transparency, for electricity ratepayers who are getting screwed each and every day, for Medicare for all, and she's against the push for data centers, which is sadly being backed by some in her party. State Representative Betsy Kafia is coming right up. You're listening to LOL.
Helping push a strong progressive message from Kalkaska to Kalamazoo, from Monroe to Marquette, from Detroit to DeWitt, from Trenton to Traverse City. Okay, Pat, I think they get the idea. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Show archives are available wherever you're listening to the show. Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can check out a complete archive of the show and other stellar content Pat doesn't share on the show. Visit patreon.com/leftoflansing. Become a member for free and check out Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
And I'd like to thank all of you for your comments and for your likes on social media and for the emails that you send me throughout the week. I want to tell you that I'm looking forward to next month for a number of reasons, but one reason that I'm really looking forward is that I'm trying to work out a date next month where our wonderful and talented show voice, Jessica, will join me either in studio or online to talk about politics and her work with a particular Senate candidate's campaign. So I'm excited to have Jessica join me here for the first time on Left of Lansing. I mean, she is the only other, you know, consistent voice other than mine that you hear each and every week here on the podcast. And besides that, she's just a great person. So I'm looking forward to that. Speaking of a good friend of the show, who's also a progressive fighter and a working class fighter for the voters in Michigan's 103rd House District in the northwest corner of Michigan's Lower Peninsula, progressive state representative Betsy Kafia recently kicked off her re-election campaign. She defeated an incumbent MAGA Republican a couple of years ago, becoming the first Democrat to win a state House seat in the Traverse City area in over a century. And the Michigan Republican Party made it their mission then to defeat Representative Kafia in 2024. But not only did she win re-election, but she won by a bigger margin the second time. And that was let's remember, in an election year that Trump won in here in Michigan. So that was very impressive. There are reasons as to why she continues to gain more and more support in her district, and we'll cover that and more when we talk with Representative Kafeia right now. Representative Kafeia, thanks so much for visiting us again here on Michigan's Premier Progressive Podcast. I hope all is well.
Thank you so much, Pat. That was such a kind introduction. It's always good to be with you.
Well, what's happening up in your district right now that maybe you can share with us?
Oh, my goodness. So many things. I mean, our housing crisis continues to get worse, and I have gotten personally involved in a couple of pretty tough. We're hearing from more folks who are very vulnerable, who are facing eviction. And it's tied to a trend nationally with big hedge funds and sort of for-profit enterprises that are buying up things like mobile home parks. And I grew up in a very low income, poor community. And like a mobile home was, it's like you're scrapping it. This is what you can afford. This is what you do. Nothing wrong with living there. But like, if you can't afford a mobile home in my community, what can you afford? And what I'm seeing is our mobile home parks are being bought up by these private equity firms who are squeezing the residents, many of whom I've knocked these doors, Pat. It's a lot of lower income. It's like our grandmothers, right? A lot of women who took care of their husbands and their children like society told them to. And so they have very small social security because they didn't do a lot of paid labor in their life, but a ton of labor that is very valuable. And now they're in their 70s and 80s. They've lived quietly with dignity in these communities for a long time. And I cried in my car so many times in 2024, knocking in my mobile home parks because they're terrified. What we are seeing is these private equity firms are buying up the mobile home park for pretty cheap. And then you have a kind of a captive audience because zoning usually doesn't let you move your mobile home out if you can't afford the lot rent anymore. So they're squeezing people with up and up and up. Like lot rent in one of my larger mobile home parks, which is an entire voting precinct, went from about $500 to almost $1,000 a month just in the last 5 years. And again, fixed income. I know women who are making less than $1,000 with just their little Social Security check. So it's people with disabilities. I've been trying to help a woman in a wheelchair in a low-income apartment complex who's being pushed out by a corporate landlord who just, it's a mess. And frankly, that's really on my heart pretty heavily because if we can't make sure that our neighbors can live with dignity, especially our grandmothers and our disabled, what does that say about us? So frankly, that's probably on my mind more than, and there's lots of other things, but that's a big one.
You know, it seems like that is really an issue as we get into northern Michigan. Last week, I talked with a state Senate candidate in the Upper Peninsula, Kelly Van Ginhoven, and she was expressing some similar things that you were just talking about in her hometown of Escanaba. And that's why housing is a major issue that she's talking about. It just sounds like the people are just getting priced out of their hometowns.
They literally are getting priced out, and it's mobile home parks, but it's also apartment complexes. And we have a really out of control situation where our housing is being bought up and treated as a commercial enterprise instead of a residence, our homes, right? To the point that it is pushing out not just vulnerable elderly folks and disabled folks on low incomes and working class poor folks like my family growing up, but actually my middle class. I've talked to so many people who are nurses, right? They are firefighters, they are teachers, they are police. I mean, heck, my superintendent of one of my schools in Leelanau County, he's like, I couldn't find a home on a superintendent's salary. How are my teachers supposed to afford to live here? So we really need, I think, to scope out and think we need some bigger reforms around the corporate greed that is showing up in our housing, because it's really costing us losing our neighbors and people that are really important in our community. And if you are comfortable, like many folks are, and you have your home, I'm so happy for you. I'm lucky to be a homeowner. But like, do we really want a community where our nurses and firefighters can't afford to live? Because that has real world consequences for everybody.
I saw that the House Speaker, Republican Matt Hall, he is proposing cutting property taxes. He thinks that's a way that would really help working class Michiganders with the cost of high housing costs right now. Where do you fall on that idea?
I mean, I think that there should be a good faith effort by anyone who purports that they represent and are there to serve the people of Michigan to try to ease the burden of high costs. But frankly, the first thing I think of with that is like a lot of working class people can't even afford their own home. So a property tax cut doesn't actually necessarily help them at all. So there's that. I think that the other thing that is really important is what I haven't heard the speaker talk about is how he would then pay for the essential services that we all chip in our taxes for, like firefighting and snow plowing and our public libraries, and how would we fund our schools. There is a way to bring relief to people without literally cutting out the very services that make our communities nice and livable to begin with. So to be blunt, I think that's kind of a red meat thing that's popular to throw out there, but I don't see a serious effort to figure out how to give people relief and also keep the services that we really want and need. I don't want to live in a community that can't afford snow plowing. I live in the north, right?
Right.
Can't afford to build our roads and our infrastructure. So I think there are other things we can do. I would like to see us look at things like a progressive income tax so that the Betsy DeVos's of the world are paying their fair share, bringing relief to the lowest income folks who are carrying our economy on their backs, and making sure corporations who get a pretty sweet deal in Michigan right now and the ultra wealthy like the DeVos's are actually paying their fair share and then investing that back into building what we need in our communities.
You know, I'm Gen X, so I guess that just means I'm always cynical at times, but it also seems like to me that when I hear property tax cut, I think that there's maybe this ulterior motive to cut essential, you know, spending on services such as plowing, like you just said. I don't know. Am I wrong for thinking that way?
I mean, look, I'm a late Gen Xer. I'm right on the edge. I was born in 77, so an Xennial or whatever you want to call us. And I've seen enough to empathize with the cynicism. And I also know, Pat, that like our future is very much in the balance right now. I feel like the decisions being made at the federal level have a huge negative ripple effect, whether it wars that are driving up gas prices while killing other people's children, right? Whether it is spending all of our resources on these vanity projects like a cage match while my people are being pushed out of their homes and can't afford food. I think we need to step back and realize that we need to elect leaders who are serious about solving real problems and not just using lazy sound bites without any real plan to bring long-term relief. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I'm always scoping out and looking at the bigger picture. And more than anything, we need people who are deeply serious about the responsibility that they hold as leaders to get serious about real problems. Michigan has been neglected under Republican leadership since Engler, and the Dems finally got control in 2023. And I feel like we barely nibbled around the edges, partly because corporate interests, but we need to really buckle down. We can't afford bad leadership in bad times.
All right. Well, then that will lead me, I guess, to this question. I mean, we are seeing this internal fight within the Michigan Democratic Party, just as we're seeing elsewhere across the country. And you've always ran, Representative, as a progressive. I mean, I think you had Bernie Sanders support way back when you got into politics like a decade ago or something like that.
I did. 2016. I was proud to have his endorsement.
So I guess then after the 2024 election, could you foresee the internal fight that we're seeing happening within the Democratic Party, both on the state and the national scale? Is this the fight that the party really had to have?
I don't know. I'm going to say that we need to decide who we want to be as a country. We need to decide if we're the kind of country where we make sure that none of our neighbors go without things like healthcare, housing with dignity, that sort of thing, that we are standing up to corporate interests. And I think that that fight was going to need to be had because the corporate class has been building out a strategy for decades now, starting with the Powell memo back when I was a kid or maybe even before I was born, where they didn't like all the progressive, you know, like they didn't like Social Security. They didn't like all these workers' rights. They didn't like environmental protections. They didn't like the advancements that were being made. And so they very calculatingly and shrewdly decided they would invest in both sides heavily to kind of get an ROI, whether it was Democrats or Republicans in charge. And they also helped us get Citizens United so that they could just pour endless cash into the political process. And it's paid off by having, I think, a neutered Democratic response to a lot of the regressive stuff that's happening because people are afraid to piss off their corporate donors. Meanwhile, the people on the ground are more and more just struggling. 60% of American families right now aren't making enough to pay the bills. That's a freaking scandal in the richest country in the world. And so I'm less interested in labels, frankly, Pat, than I am, like, are you anti-corruption? Are you going to stand up to corporate interests? And who do you serve? Do you serve the people who need you the most, who can't write you a check? Or are you going to coddle your big donors?
Well, then,
and I think that's really coming to a head because Trump is so obviously corrupt and so obviously giving favors to the corporations. You can't fight that if you're kind of still trying to buddy up to folks who are making decisions that are making life very hard for everyday people out of greed.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's why you saw that successful push to at least get some corporate money out of Lansing politics. And we might be making that huge first step here with the Michiganders for Money Out of Politics ballot initiative. Just to remind everyone, organizers recently submitted, I think, somewhere around like 560,000 signatures, right? Somewhere around that number.
Yeah, it was over 560,000, more than 500,000. And that was really impressive. I made a deliberate point when I decided to run for a third term that I would tell the full truth of what I have seen and witnessed in my time in politics, and how corrosive the big money interests in Lansing and in generally in politics is impacting Democrats and Republicans alike. And so it was really important to me to support Mop Up Michigan, the ballot initiative. My team and I helped collect signatures, and I'm so awesome. Proud of the people of Michigan for, I consider it staging an intervention, right? You can't have nice things if corruption is ruling public. And I know how important it is for us to draw a clear line and actually stand up to corruption and corporate greed and overreach when it's hurting our people. So I'm really impressed and proud of the people of Michigan for doing the incredible work to collect over 500,000 signatures. And they're sweating it in Lansing. I've heard that these big moneyed interests are quite worried and they're lawyering up. They're going to try to keep it off the ballot. And I think that is a tell for how significant it would be to pass a ballot initiative that prevents government contractors and some of the biggest corporate players like our utilities, DTE, Consumers, Blue Cross, from being able to give money to the very people who should be holding them accountable, like the governor, the attorney general, legislators, right? There just should never be that kind of influence. And it is very prevalent at the moment.
You were talking about how you really don't like putting labels on things and you just kind of like looking at things maybe on how to help the working class. When you see a petition like this draw in over 500,000 signatures, that tells me, I would have to think, that this is not a left or right issue. This is the working class here in the state saying, you know what, we're feeling left out, we feel unheard, and we are the ones who have to actually do something, because a bill like this ballot initiative language, this would never pass in Lansing anytime soon, right?
We have tried those kinds of things, to your point. You know, we introduced all sorts of ethics and campaign finance reform and accountability anti-corruption bills. And even with the Democrats in trifecta, they were squashed. So, yeah, I think the people are picking up, unfortunately, the corroded political culture. And you're right. I had Democrats, Republicans, Independents. No matter who you talk to out in the real world outside the Lansing bubble, people don't want their political leaders to be influenced by corporate lobbyists and big checks instead of focusing on who they're there to work for, which is the working class, the middle class, right? Yep. It gets to be a real disconnect when that money gets in the middle. It clouds people's clarity and like kind of moral compass in my experience.
Representative, when did you realize how much power certain corporate donors had in Lansing? I mean, did you know that before you arrived in Lansing, or was it real soon after?
I mean, look, my entire, if you go all the way back in the Wayback Machine and you Google young Betsy Cofia at 34 years old when I ran the very first time in 2012, I made a video about how I was really worried that big money had really poisoned our political process on both sides of the aisle, and I would never take corporate money because of that. So I could see it then, but I have now watched it up close. Look, we had huge utility outages. We have some of the worst service in the whole like Midwest with some of the highest prices. And like DTE has so much power that we weren't allowed to advance any of the utility accountability legislation that is wildly popular in the real world, even as the Democratic trifecta came in and had outage after outage in the dead of winter. Like, that's got to tell you something. I have a colleague who worked for 2 straight years on some critical mental health reforms that would actually require big insurance companies to cover mental health, inpatient care, things like that. And I watched her. She's very diplomatic, much more than me, and like bent over backwards to try to get it where it could pass. She told me that Blue Cross was able to kill it at the last minute. She thought she had the votes and it never was allowed a vote. So that power to kill something without nobody ever having to go on the record to vote against it, that is something we have got to reckon with. And I watched it before my eyes. And I just think we cannot afford that kind of bullshit. Forgive me, but life and death, like situations with mental health care. So yeah, it's a problem. It's a real problem.
All right. So you chose not to attend this year's Mackinac Policy Conference this year. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Why so?
It's not my scene. It's mostly people who are already very powerful and already have most of what they need talking to their lawmakers on an island. And the asking price is what, like $7,000 a ticket, and it's on an island. So to me, the idea that this is where the best and brightest ideas for how to serve a state of 10 million people, when the vast, vast majority of those constituents could never afford to be a part of the conversation, is already kind of sideways. I'm a blue collar kid. I see through bullshit. Let's just put it that way. And that's a lot of bullshit.
Preach it, preach it. And I agree with you completely. Are you, is some of this is stemming, I'm supposing, that you just have not been able to get a lot of your government transparency bills passed, that they've been shoved aside, as you've already mentioned. And that also includes when Democrats still had the trifecta. Can you talk about your transparency bills and why you think it is so important to get those passed here in Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, our transparency bills, we worked with the current Attorney General, Dana Nessel, who was, and her team, who have been incredible partners. We worked with current Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson and her team, because, you know, AG Nessel has the enforcement part and Secretary of State Benson has the oversight part with campaign finances, right? We worked with them for 9 months to build a really strong, you know, ethics and transparency package. And it was sort of stunning how mediocre the response was in Lansing. And I think, I don't blame my colleagues particularly for being hesitant. It's a culture thing. The culture has become so kind of degraded that it's normal to allow things like lobbyists to buy fancy meals for you and take you wine and dine you and get you box tickets to games. And somebody was offered Taylor Swift tickets, which nobody could get. Just access to us, access to our staff who have a lot of influence over us, access to department heads. So it was addressing some of that and putting some guardrails around that. And then transparency around all these C4 dark money account, like with the Lee Chatfield situation, there's all this money going in from who knows who, because they don't have to disclose, and little transparency on how it's being spent. It has a real corrosive effect on the quality of lawmaking that is occurring and who gets the focus. So our bills really were trying to get at that. They didn't go even as far as I would have liked. And even that wasn't really given the airtime that it needed. And that was just an indicator to me that we needed an intervention, which is where I'm excited about the ballot initiative.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you wish Governor Whitmer would have been a stronger advocate for transparency reform?
Yeah. She ran on it when she ran in 2018. Yeah. And I have been, and this is no secret, I've been deeply disappointed in the lack of, she swings a big stick. I have seen what it looks like when she puts, you know, look at data centers. She's put her thumb all the way on the scale for data centers, and she helps make things happen when she thinks they're important. So including even with the Speaker Hall, like their relationship. So I feel like I would like to see her maybe as her big farewell gift to the state of Michigan is to help push these through. And I have been disappointed that it has not been more of a priority. She did run on it.
Yeah, she did. She did. And yeah, thanks for reminding everybody about that. One last question while I still have you here, Representative. I know that you are a big advocate for Medicare for all in Michigan. I know that you were in a town hall in Traverse City last December with your colleague, State Representative Carrie Reingans, has been pushing the MyCare, healthcare for all. Something that I think, when you look at the polls, it seems like it is always popular, but yet it doesn't pass. And I'm wondering if we can really get to that point where we could have some kind of a Medicare for all law here in Michigan, at least since big money interests have spent years really in convincing working class voters that health care really is a luxury. What are your ideas?
Yeah, that's wild that something you need to literally survive is treated as a luxury. Yeah, I mean, look, I will start by saying I grew up in a very rural working class family that couldn't afford to go to the doctor when we were sick, and we couldn't afford health insurance. And I think that's obscene in the richest country on the planet. And it hasn't gotten better. In many ways, too many families are still going without care. And it's not because sometimes they don't have health insurance. It's that these insurance companies have been allowed to jack the premiums so high and the deductibles that it's essentially just a catastrophic plan. I talked to a young middle class family who said that the parents, after what the feds did with the One Big Beautiful Bill, which is getting rid of the Obamacare subsidies, they are now rationing care such that neither of them have insurance now, and just so that they can make sure their kids are covered. And they're like, we're white knuckling it that neither one of us with our health concerns that it gets any worse because we're our kid's primary caregiver. And that's one story of many. I get texts regularly from doctors in my region, young doctors who we want to keep, who are so distraught already at how they're having to fight insurance companies for things like covering a child's asthma inhaler that they need to survive, or having patients refuse cancer treatment. So I guess my thing is, I think that the question needs to be reframed of why not? If every other developed country on the planet, including ones with far less money than the United States, has figured out a way to make sure that every one of their people actually gets healthcare with dignity, why the hell not? Let's name what the barriers are and let's figure out how to knock them down. Because, again, I'll go back to, what does it say about who we are as a country and as neighbors if we're going to look the other way while insurance companies rake in record profits, give lots of money to politicians, and my 72-year-old mother, who's still cleaning houses for a living, I'm worried about her losing her Medicaid. Like, what are we doing here?
State Representative Betsy Cafia of Michigan's 103rd House District. I kept you longer than I promised, so thanks so much for giving us some more of your valuable time here. Oh, and if people would like to learn more about you and your campaign, how can they do so?
They can go to my campaign website, BetsyCafia.com, or my socials. I would recommend, too, we try to be pretty robust on the state side as well and do regular e-newsletters and monthly public office hours. So I always welcome folks to come and engage with us on my official side. And I am just really hoping that as we chart a path forward, Pat, that we have people with clear anti-corruption, stand up to corporate interests, fight for your people. That is how we're going to get through this very difficult period as a country. We can't really afford anything less.
Well, I think I can speak for a lot of people here in Michigan that we're thankful for your voice and common sense in Lansing. So thanks again for talking with us again. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Absolutely. It's always a pleasure. Take care, Pat.
If you'd like to talk to Pat at any time, his email is leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to vent about the Trump regime? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to complain about stupidity in Lansing and in Washington, D.C.? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to debate which Great Lake is the best? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. That one's a fun one. Bye.
Special thanks to Representative Betsy Cafia for talking with us again here this week. I'd like to add an addendum to our talk as part of this week's last call. But first, the LOL web poll. Thanks for your votes last week, as socialism is preferred over capitalism by all of you. I'm a democratic socialist, and I have been for most of my life, despite not really calling myself that. I didn't really know much about it when I was a kid, but my values have never really changed, so I've always been a democratic socialist, and I guess I also saw myself just as a member of the working class, no matter what. But there's a little irony with the whole socialism versus capitalism debate. What we're seeing right now in our supposed capitalist country is not capitalism. It's engineered capitalism, or crony capitalism, or even better, it's just plain monopolization. Our government backs certain companies and backs certain industries at the expense of others. It's always picking winners and losers, and that engineers or rigs the game for certain elite companies and the politicians that they bribe. That's not capitalism, everybody. There's this idea that we're living under capitalism. No, it's not. Real capitalism doesn't require crony capitalism. And maybe in some strange way, we need more socialism in order to save capitalism. Now, this week's LOL web poll, is democratic socialism on the rise, or do you see it losing steam here soon? Yes, yes, it is on the rise. No, it will lose steam soon. Vote on Left of Lansing's Twitter page or YouTube page, or on our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/leftoflansing. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. So during my talk there with Representative Cafia, I noticed that she was saying the following phrase a few times. She would say, the real world. It doesn't take a genius to understand why people like Betsy Cafia are able to win elections. She knows what needs to be done to help the working class, and she's tired of being told that things can't be done. Now, here's a video that's on YouTube from November 3rd of 2016, where Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders visited Grand Traverse County as he was stumping for Hillary Clinton and for Democrats. And Bernie introduced Betsy Cafia, who is running for a state representative seat in 2016 and lost. But of course, as we see today, she kept fighting until she did win a seat to represent the people of that area. And it should be noted that Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump days later, just as she lost to Bernie Sanders here in Michigan. Working class Michiganders wanted somebody who was going to fight for them. Unfortunately, they chose somebody who was only going to fight for himself and for those in the Epstein class, which, of course, Hillary Clinton's husband was kind of a part of. But I just like to quickly play this clip for you because there's something Representative Cafia says in this clip with Bernie Sanders back in 2016 that is completely true. Listen.
This is Betsy Cafia. Know her, so she's going to stay here with your help. She's going to become the next member of the state legislature from this.
Yes. Oh my goodness! How much do we love Bernie Sanders?
We were talking about you, not me.
Quick walk out here, and we talked about wishing we had more time, and, you know, to get the word out before the Democratic primary. But you know what? This man right here started a fire. He started a fire in so many people. All of you standing here, and in me, he and you are the reason that I stepped up to run again. And it is time. It is time to elect a progressive to represent Grand Traverse County and become one of the first Bernie-crats in the state legislature. Muscle that you have. You brought out the second highest percentage turnout in the entire state of Michigan, 65% of the vote for this man and for each one of us. It is time to do that again next Tuesday. Up and down the ballot, it is incredibly important that we get out the vote for the children in this room and the children yet unborn. It is our future at stake, and it is time for us to all step up and do the work and then make sure that we help this man advance the most progressive platform in the history of the modern Democratic Party. It's not a piece of paper. It is a living document, and it's our responsibility to make sure that we have Bernie's back so that that happens at the national level. Thank you.
You can hear the fight and progressive leadership qualities from Betsy Cafia right there in 2016, can't you? It's so easy to hear. She hasn't changed, and that's awesome. But Betsy Cafia was so right back then that despite his loss in 2016, and of course what would happen in 2020, Bernie Sanders did start the progressive fire in so many people way back in 2016. And that fire is now spreading in state legislature races, in local races, like in Detroit City Council, where two Democratic Socialists are now there. It's spreading in Congress and, let's hope, in the Senate. The corporate Democratic Party establishment elites failed in 2016. They failed to see what Bernie Sanders' campaign was feeling, a working class resentment. And that's been brewing ever since the 1980s and through the financial crash of 2007 and 08, and it continues to brew today as the crony capitalism continues to work for the billionaire tech bros. And rather than helping out the working class, the Democratic Party establishment chose to focus more on corporate interests. And thus, we got Donald Trump, and we got the beginning of fascism. It seems like, you know, people like Bernie Sanders and Representative Betsy Cafia know exactly what the working class is up against. And they've been rewarded because they actually fight for the working class. They are a voice for the working class. The rise of progressive Democrats and young progressive Democrats or Democratic Socialists isn't some new phenomenon. It was always there for the working class. Instead of choosing Trump, Democratic Socialism and progressivism was always there for the working class. We just needed people to represent it, and we needed people to fight for it.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to State Representative Betsy Cafia for being on the show this week and sharing her progressive passion with all of us on here. Can't wait to have her back on the show here again soon. I'm hoping to have a progressive candidate for Congress join the show here next week, but I don't really want to announce it until, you know, it's really in the books. So I don't want to say anything just yet. And I'm also hoping to have some other candidates on this month who are rocking the working class vote with a strong working class message and campaign, including someone from my neck of the woods up here in Gratiot County. And of course, like I said, the show voice, Jessica, will join me sometime here in July as well. Everyone, please have a safe 4th of July holiday, and please be mindful of those of us with pets. I get it. It's the 4th of July. We love blowing up things here in America. But once it gets to midnight, America wants calm pets and sleep. As Apollo Creed said, be a thinker, not a stinker. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.